Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. I'm here today with Alix Lebec. Did I say that right?
Yes, perfect.
Okay, all right. So in America, it's Alix. We're grateful to have you on. So Alix is a creative and seasoned entrepreneur and advisor who has spent the past two decades working out the intersection of impact investing, philanthropy, and sustainable finance. And I think we're going to have some great discussions around that. Interesting enough, you're born in France, thus probably the name.
Yes.
Now, this is interesting. You were raised in Korea and China, so we'll have to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah.
But obviously, you bring a very global perspective to your work and a deep understanding of solutions that effectively address poverty, inequality, and climate change. Among other notable works, Alix is the CEO and founder of Lebec Consulting.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. So let's start off. I want to get a little bit of perspective of your background.
Yeah.
Maybe where you're born, which we mentioned there, a little about you growing up, and then a little bit about your career.
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you so much for having me. And, you know, as you shared, I've worked about now 20 years across philanthropy, impact investing, and sustainable finance. And that journey for me really did start with my international upbringing. So I was born in Paris, France. My passport is French, so I'm not American, but I know I sound American.
Yeah, you do.
At the age of 8 years old, my family moved to South Korea. My dad was a business development executive for an engineering firm in the automobile industry and decided to have my brother and I attend an American school on an American military base. Although we were not military and we were not American, that childhood in Korea, so I was eight, was there until I was 16, were, you know, forming years of my life as an adult, right? So I was introduced to both Asian culture, Korean culture, and also American culture. I'm so grateful for that because my parents and I traveled across the region. So on one end, you know, I just fell in love with our globally interconnected world, but also just was really exposed to the differences, you know, in access to resources and economic status that you have in different communities around the world, depending on where you're born and where you live. And so seeing that level of inequality, certainly in different parts of Asia at a young age, really opened my perspective. I think just really inspired me to want to use all the tools and knowledge and insights that I have to contribute to make the world more equitable.
So give us a little about your career.
My career started at the World Bank in Paris. Okay. But I have to say that when I moved back to Paris when I was 19 years old to go to business school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So this really kind of serendipitously came together. I ended up working at an international documentary film firm where I met a documentary film producer that was doing a really meaningful piece on the conflict in Sudan. And I just started to immerse myself in the history of Africa, of the aid industry. And it just so happened that a job at the World Bank in Paris opened up as I was kind of immersing myself in this whole field. And so I started with the World Bank in Paris and then got a really exciting job with a bank in Southeast Asia. So moved to Bangkok, working in also Cambodia and Laos. You know, I had the chance to work on education and community development projects. And as much as I loved the experience, I still felt pretty removed from what local communities were going through. And I also realized that as much as I understand the need for public policy and diplomacy, I really had an entrepreneurial spirit and I really wanted to figure out what are the business and financial capital tools that can be provided so that people can help themselves. And there isn't a need for this very top-down aid industry. So I'm back to school in London. took a job at the Clinton Global Initiative. I had heard about the Clinton Global Initiative and Jeff Skoll and the Skoll Foundation creating this community of social entrepreneurs that were really disrupting the traditional kind of aid model. So I went there and I met with world-renowned entrepreneur Gary White, who was merging his organization with actor Matt Damon to form water.org. And I had heard about their work in a press conference and was really, really intrigued by this concept of microfinance for water and sanitation. So water.org had just started pioneering this concept that there are millions of people around the world who would absolutely pay for better and more sustainable water solutions if they just had access to a microcredit loan. And I found this fascinating. It was really in line with my goal to learn about financial tools to solve these big issues. So I joined water.org when it was still a very small organization. Help grow that organization globally and make a case to corporate foundations that there was a different way to solve this problem. And then we created a second organization together called Water Equity with a really amazing entrepreneur leadership team that was really about bringing impact investors to the table. 6 years later, you know, we went to market with three funds, $200 million in assets under management, really demonstrating that it was possible to invest in water and sanitation in ways that could solve this issue and also generate strong financial returns. Loved the experience, but I was still frustrated that at a macro level, things weren't moving fast enough. Not enough institutional investors stepping in, not enough women involved. And also thought, you know, there's this whole new generation of innovative emerging market women entrepreneurs who don't have these tools, these networks, these insights. I want to help them. And that's really when I created Lebecque Consulting. So that was really on the heels of the global pandemic. Quickly hired an incredible team of women who were passionate about really moving capital in meaningful ways to generate more impact.
So how long have you been doing that as a consultant?
So we are now in our third year. And, you know, it's exciting. We've got clients all across that capital continuum, which is something I really wanted.
So give us a snapshot. You can leave names out, but
We have entrepreneurs that are, you know, going to market with very exciting impact investment funds, solving big issues like energy, agriculture, water. And so we're helping them on their journey, along with some entrepreneurs that are addressing racial equity, climate here in the United States, building sustainable food systems. And then we work with some next gen philanthropists and impact investors that are looking to really understand how philanthropy and impact investing can come together to have a greater impact and move more capital in ways that are going to solve these big issues that are trillion-dollar issues. And then we have institutional asset managers that we work with to help them with environmental, social, and governance strategies, and also to think about how can we start to move from just looking at sustainable finance from the perspective of risk mitigation, but actual value creation? So what is that intersection with impact investing? And so we have a new client in this area. I know we're not naming, but, you know, global coalition of businesses that's really looking to make a strong case for how philanthropy and impact investing are critical capital tools to accelerate sustainable finance objectives. And this client is particularly focused on making the case around education for all. So that's a snapshot of our work right now.
Well, it's you're doing a lot. And I commend you for stepping out and being an entrepreneur yourself. I'm doing that today. I've done that for the last 5-6 years after being an executive. And it's a different skill set than sitting, you know, quote unquote, in the ivory tower, so to speak. Kudos to you and what you're doing.
Thank you. Although I will tell you, I mean, launching Water Equity felt very similar to that. I mean, yes, you know, it was certainly with the co-founders of water.org and we had resources, but it was really starting from scratch. And I think having a lot of resilience and getting more no's before you get a yes. But yeah, launching Lebecque Consulting is definitely the next step.
So start here for me. look, most of our listeners are here in the US. Actually, we do have some in Africa as well, but most of them are here. And so let me just ask the most basic question to you, because I think in the US, this gets confused. What the heck is an impact investor, or what is impact investing?
Impact investing is really about investing intentionally with the goal of generating a social impact alongside a financial return. But generating that impact, right, is number one. And number two is finding ways to do that in ways where you can also generate a financial return. And there's different profiles. So in impact investing, what we typically say is, you know, there's investment opportunities all along the risk, return, and impact spectrum. You could look at an investment opportunity that's going to generate much smaller financial returns, but solve a very big challenge for underserved communities in Latin America, for instance. But because of the way it's structured, the risk is minimal. Or you could have an investment opportunities that has lower financial return, extremely high risk, and extremely high impact. Or you could have an opportunity that has high risk, market rate returns, and a different kind of impact that might not be as sizable as the impact with that other opportunity. And so I think what's exciting about impact investing is being able to build a portfolio approach to impact. So you can find investments that meet these different criteria, but it's really an opportunity to get more value from your money. You know, we live in a time where there's just a direct connection between how your capital can generate value and more opportunity for more people. You know, it's really exciting when you see that come to life. And as example, I mean, how exciting is it that today you can put $1 million in a water fund? It's going to help 5 million people get access to safe drinking water across, let's say, South, Southeast Asia, and Africa. And you'll get, you know, a 12% return annually on that opportunity. It's a nice way to diversify where you might have other investments that generate a different kind of return. And like I said, you know, a different kind of impact. Here's to hoping impact investing makes it to the mainstream, but that's how I would define it.
I would agree. And that's how we define it as well. But they're clearly, you know, you enumerate on the different ways that you could come at this. And I would say the general stereotype in the US is that it's concessionary in nature, which there is, you can find that, but that's not necessarily what all the opportunities are. And in fact, I would actually argue part of the reason why impact investing is becoming so large is because intuitively the world knows that charities only have so much money. They know that the governments only have so much money. And so to really make a difference, you need sustainable business models. And so they're looking to investments and companies and that kind of stuff to go, okay, you have to have sustainable models. So it's actually interesting. It challenges the paradigm a little bit of, and I'm not saying anything wrong with charities because you need them, but you can't live in a world where everything's charity-based. It wouldn't work.
Absolutely. And let's put some stats around that, right? Like 40% of global CEOs believe that their businesses will no longer be economically viable in the next 10 years. And I think there's no better proof point, right, than the past 3 years, I think, just really come to terms that things like the climate crisis or however we want to think about global warming and what's happening around us, you know, it's not a future issue. This is something that we're living every day. When we think about that risk and how that's factored into how we think about financial returns and a sustainable business model, is really, really important. If you can invest today in a fund or a business that is creating opportunity that's going to last for the next 30 to 50 years and make sure that there are resources and something left so we can continue to build on that, but maybe generates a 15% return. And again, these numbers are just totally arbitrary here.
Sure.
Compared to investing in a business model that gets you 25 or 30% by next quarter, but is depleting our chance to have something more sustainable over the long term that will appeal to what millennial and Gen Z consumers want. Is that really a safer, higher return business investment? Not really. So I think the lens through which we look at impact investing and how it's mapped to how we view investment in general today is so important. And as you say, I think presents new opportunities. I mean, sustainability and longevity of financial wellness matters just as much as, you know, obviously we're all feeling the crunch from the state of the global economy today. So I would even argue that, you know, what is concessionary? Like how are we thinking about these different terms in the global business environment today and how we choose to invest in what?
From my experience, so I spent 20 years in the traditional finance business, and even defining market rate return, I mean, okay, you can define it, but it's like, you know, it's not even an exact science as much as people want to make it. So yeah, there is a need to relook at all this stuff and think about risk. And one of the things that I've noticed is, contrary to what a lot of people think, because a lot of people think impact investing, it's all heart, a little more charity leaning, that somehow it's soft on numbers, it's soft on intellect. And I would actually tell you, I have found, I mean, you can find that where it's heavy heart and the models aren't great sustainability. I've actually seen more creativity and innovation in this space because you define success slightly different, and therefore you have more things you're trying to solve, which forces your brain to go solve this stuff in a much more holistic and creative way than, you know, and I've worked in the past with big private equity firms, and I'm not going to name their names, and they're smart people, but I've talked to many in the impact space that rival, if not surpass, the creativity innovation that I've seen in that world.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, going back to another great point that you made, I think the lens through which we look at philanthropy has to be very different, because philanthropy, unlike any other form of financing, can take all the risk in the world. If philanthropy can be utilized in ways, you know, and I'm thinking, for instance, of like philanthropic first loss guarantees, and hopefully I'm not getting too technical here, but if philanthropy can be used in ways where we de-risk opportunities for more impact and institutional capital to step in, we have a small chance to steer the level of capital that's needed to address these trillion-dollar issues. I think what you're seeing today as part of the whole conversation as well is that these trillion-dollar issues, whether we're talking about water, global health, climate, inequality, you know, all of these things, it's not like these are problems over here. This is embedded in our entire global economy, how we think about business, supply chains, consumers, what's the future of our global economy. All of these things are fully intertwined. I think what's really, again, exciting, and it sounds like it's a conversation we need to have more and more around impact investing, it's again, rethinking what is the role of capital in society today, and how great is it that there are data-driven and track record opportunities, right? Opportunities that have a strong track record that present a chance for us to get more out of our capital to reimagine how we're thinking about our global economy. And I think that's what's really exciting about impact investing. And grant financing, philanthropy, plays a role in that. And I think that's a part of the conversation that also gets left out. And to share with you, I mean, that was really one of the key things that really inspired in the launch of Lebec Consulting was the importance of working with players across that capital spectrum to understand that all of these capital tools are connected and complementary to each other.
So you bring up the word capital. When did you realize the power of capital? And then maybe what does that mean to you?
There was maybe a little trigger of it when I was working at the World Bank and I was working on an education project for street children and trying to bring all of these different big players together. On one hand, it was wonderful. You know, we got the local Ministry of Education and the World Bank, UNICEF. There were some private sector players. Everybody, you know, was excited by the project. But essentially, the biggest learning I learned out of that was, well, before we get all these stakeholders together, who's funding this and what's the source of financing and how does it trickle all the way down to those communities? I wasn't yet fully familiar with microfinance, but I think something in my mind was like, okay, there's got to be a different way before we get to that level of getting all these stakeholders together to make sure that there's financing for these different initiatives. And then if we're only dependent on these big multilateral development banks, how is that creating economic opportunity for people living in these different markets? So I think building on that, the work at water.org really magnified this in a positive way. Being able to see how you could raise, and these again are not exact numbers to date.
Sure.
Seeing how you could raise, let's say, you know, $20 million in philanthropy to provide $100,000 to $300,000 grant to microfinance institutions all over the world to help them have some startup funding to build a loan product that's going to help a woman living in an urban slum in India have the financing she needs to pay for the construction in her home. Imagine you can do that. And that $20 million in philanthropy unlocks $1 billion of commercial capital that that microfinance institution is going to use to make that loan. And then when that loan is repaid, because those loans have a 99% repayment rate, that bank can make a loan to another person. And you don't have to raise any more philanthropy to make that happen. That catalytic capital equation was the big eye-opener for me. I'm really passionate about it. And I have to tell you that now, you know, in the lens of our work at Lebec Consulting, we're starting to see private equity firms that are coming to us and saying, we want to get together with philanthropists and impact investors because we have a lot of capital to move and we need these sophisticated finance structures and the use of philanthropy to make it all happen. And so I just see a lot of potential in those different sources of financing working together. I hope that makes sense.
No, it's good. It's very good. So you mentioned, you know, a number of the different big issues of the day. You have a sense of wanting to make a difference. What does stewardship mean to you?
And I love that question, by the way. To me, stewardship means building relationships and partnerships that are really anchored around trust, humility, and listening. I think there's never been a more important time for what we call radical collaboration. And I know collaboration, you know, when we're trying to run so fast and with limited budgets and we need to make things happen, it feels hard, but we really need each other. You know, whether we have different belief systems or we see the world differently, there's so much power when you can get different people in a room excited and come together around a solution. And I think that's what our world really needs right now, whether it's, you know, in the context of our global economy, politics, or all the things that we're trying to overcome, because we are living in a time where it's a polycrisis mode, right? There's a different crisis every week. It's happening all the time in different parts of the world. And so truly listening to each other and building trusted partnerships that can allow us to move things forward is what stewardship means to me. I think it goes with, you know, finding a middle ground, even when we are advocating for the equality of women and all of these big issues, you know, we need men to be part of the solution, right? It's like I said, it's about bringing all of these different people together in a way where we don't have these kind of top-down relationships, or it's just that concept of equality where we all show up as equal partners, but we are listening to each other and our partnerships are anchored around trust.
How do you measure when we've arrived? What's the goal we're shooting for? How would you think about that? Well, that's not an easy question. I get that.
Yeah. I'm going to give you two answers to that. One is definitely anchored around something we're passionate about. You have more than a quarter of a billion of women who now run their own businesses today around the world. Despite how well women-led businesses perform and all the stats we have out there, there's a scarcity of funding. There's a lot of inequality in the process and so forth. And I think that we would gain, the whole world would gain significantly if $5 to $6 trillion would be invested in women-owned and gender-inclusive businesses around the world. In emerging markets, women are shaping consumer behaviors and are reshaping commerce in very exciting ways. They have a front seat to climate change. They are the ones who are responsible for finding water, food, and household products for their families. So they drive consumer spending in so many of these markets. And so I think really taking a bet on these new businesses and women entrepreneurs is, I think, when we will have arrived. I would love to read a media headline that says $5 trillion through a global coalition have been invested in women-led and gender-inclusive businesses around the world that are addressing climate head-on and reimagining industries and so forth. And then the second piece, it's a more direct response to something I saw here in Miami when we recently brought an event together It was so great to see a huge global corporation, a big philanthropic funder, a private equity firm, and an entrepreneur guide a discussion around how all of these different forms of capital together would solve the global water and climate crisis. And seeing the excitement in the room, men and women from all parts of the world, with all different types of beliefs in Miami, in a city, right, where we can't deny that rising sea levels are impacting us and economic inequality. And yet there's this rise of entrepreneurship. To see the excitement in the room making that happen gave me a lot of hope. And so imagine a world where global institutional investors, impact investors, and philanthropists are coming together and agreeing on X billions of unrestricted philanthropic capital can de-risk $5 to $10 trillion worth of investments to create a more sustainable global economy and create political consensus around that from all sides of the aisle would be when we arrived. I realize that's a lot, but those are the two ways I would answer that question.
So the last question I normally end with, and you may have just answered in the way you answered my other questions. So if you could have a dream come true for you, what would it be?
I would love for us to be part of an initiative that invests $5 trillion in women-led businesses in emerging markets and in the US and Europe, I mean, around the world. I think creating a world where women can fully exercise their economic power gets me really jazzed up. I have to have a second one.
Okay, you can.
You have to know that outside of work, dancing is my passion.
Okay.
Ever a chance to do my freestyle on a global stage next to an artist that I really admire, that would also be very cool.
All right. I love it. I love it. And so if you had to choose an artist, who would it be?
Oh, man. Gotta be Beyonce. I mean, come on. You know, that would be very, very, very exciting. Although it could be another, but you know, there's so many that I really love. It's such a hard, hard question, but that would be really exciting.
I appreciate your vulnerability and sharing with us. My younger brother lives in Rwanda, Africa. We're doing some work out there. And so just understanding how critical, I mean, not just in Africa, across the world, just how critical women are in, you know, it's often said you want to fix problems, help women, especially around the family unit. So I don't know what that says about men, but you need them both. Look, on the other hand, I do a ton of work in the prison system. And I will tell you, a common theme there is an absent dad. So you got to have, obviously, really, at the end of the day, in an ideal world, you'd love a family unit that in a community that would lift each other up and be, co-journers with everybody in this life. But anything else you want to share before we sign off?
Now, I just want to say I completely agree with you. And it's a really, really important point. We want men to be part of the solution. Like, we want you to be out there saying, wow, you know, there's this great portfolio of women-led businesses. We took a bet on these businesses. I think it's, we really need men and women at the table equally. I think that's just a really important message. It does feel like there's a lot of things happening around us, but what keeps me very hopeful is, man, there's just never been a better time to really rethink how we are investing and building a new foundation for our global economy. And I think there's room for everybody to participate in that. And I think that's a really, really important point to make.
Yeah, and one follow-up comment I'll give to you on that is, and you mentioned this earlier, but in the US, we'll start with the US for a second. I think we don't fully even appreciate the amazing opportunity to live in a state or in a country where you can invest in all different kinds of things. And today for, I don't know what the math is, for as little as $2 or whatever it is. And we kind of take that for granted. And I almost look at it a little bit like voting, and I don't mean to get that political on this, but we are a participant in this. And our capital is doing something. And so I think Wall Street, and I don't want to pick out Wall Street, but I think the financial community, for whatever reason, has kind of distanced capital from where it's going in the minds of a lot of investors. And actually getting connected with it in the language that I use, kind of strips away the normal emotions that come with investing, which is fear and greed often creep in. Yeah. And when you can align it with your values and watch how it is impacting others around you, you actually get a joy and freedom. And so to your comment about, you know, getting fired up about seeing women-led businesses across the United States and the world and invest, I mean, I have a deep passion for investing in incarcerated men and women or returning citizens. Like, I want people's hearts to be fired up and to see these individuals as human beings who've made a mistake, but are on the track to, you know, for their family. And so capital has the ability to pull us together, but it equally has the ability to pull us apart.
Oh, that's such a great, I completely agree with you. And I it plugs into when you're asking me, when did capital kind of, when did you start thinking about that? And I think it's exactly that. I think it was seeing that it has such a strong force to pull us together. Especially we can use it in such exciting ways today. Oh, that's such an important message. I couldn't agree more.
The irony is the only way that it works is when you take the focus off of self. You have to be thinking about your capital in terms of others. And right now that's really mainly done through philanthropy only. And we need to challenge that notion. But I think part of it is giving stories, showing people how their capital is making a difference. I don't know anybody who you say, hey, if I could give you a good investment and you happen to be interested or concerned about this issue or whatever, I don't know how anybody would go, yeah, I don't want that. They all would want it.
I mean, exactly. So I think it goes to something else. You know, if we could integrate standardized impact measurement into the mainstream financial ecosystem, Sir Ronald Cohen, who has been speaking about this, I see you're nodding your head, so you know, that would be a game changer. We have to rethink what risk means in investing. We can't just be looking at past performance. We need to understand how future climate risk impacts our financial decisions. And two, a standardized, you know, like dollar metric that gives us a sense of the impact associated with how we're using our capital would be a game changer. And it's essential because I think today, how you invest your capital, even if it is with a sense of self, it's going to have an impact, negative or positive.
Yeah.
And the more it's positive, the more you're creating an on-ramp that's going to give you personal joy and community joy. And I think it's just about really embedding that in our global financial ecosystem. And that's why we do the work that we do, right? It's to plant new seeds.
That's right. That's right. Well, I used to have hair, and it just shows how hard we're out of work it is. So let me lose the hair. You keep your hair and I'll bang my head against the wall. Well, look, we really appreciate you taking the time and sharing and being vulnerable. Best of luck to you. And we will look for you to be on the stage someday with a famous artist. We're going to leave it open for that. So with that, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Rate and view us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. Again, thank you. And when do you go back to France?
So I'm actually going back there next week. I have some client meetings in London, and then I'm taking a week to go see the family in France. I'm excited.
Well, I took 2 years of French 30 some years ago, and every day before I'd go in that class, I'd sweat bullets. All of the liaisons and how the words come together, I'd be like, no, just write it on a piece of paper so I can understand what you're saying. But it is a beautiful language.
Yeah, it's so tough, especially when you learn it as an adult. And I think just the difference in the tonalities with French from English, I am totally with you. I kind of wish I had kept a little bit of my French accent, you know, it would be.
Well, you don't have a French accent at all.
I know. Nobody believes me when I tell them I'm French. They're like, what? And I'm like, no, really. I mean,
it's now, like, when you speak in French, do people think, do you sound totally French or do you have an accent coming back?
So the first 2 to 3 days, maybe even the first week, there's a very slight accent. So people ask if I'm you know, Norwegian or Canadian. Okay. A lot of people think I'm Canadian. Okay. After a week though, it's completely gone. And yeah, And I start dreaming in French. It's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that is an interesting deal. I actually took 1 year of German. Again, this was when I was a sophomore in high school, but I was actually dreaming in German, which they say that's a good thing. Probably because I have German in me, but language is not my friend. I used to be able to write it and read it, but speaking it's like, oh, that's another thing. So,
well, listen, I'm right there with you. I'm really trying to brush up on my Spanish. I would like to be fluent in Spanish.
Okay, now, so is that three languages?
That would be three languages. That'd be great, you know?
That would be great. All right. Well, it was a pleasure. We'll stay in touch. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital. It does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.